Ismat Mangla is a staff writer at Money Magazine. Ismat, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
So I want to ask you, you know, finance, it was always something that I thought I had to give to the experts, since it's, you know, something that didn't come naturally to me. But now there are so many apps, there are so many websites to help you with sort of every aspect of your financial life. What have you been finding?
Yeah, there really is a lot out there. You know, when they say there's an app for that, they're not kidding. And there's so many new things that have come out that it can kind of make your head spin. So we were sort of able to go through all the best stuff to find out sort of, you know, what offers the best opportunities. And we basically found that there are a lot of great tools that will help you sort of manage your money, you know, manage your accounts, manage your investing accounts. There are some great tools that will help you cut your bills. There's a lot out there that will make it easier to get good deals when you're shopping. And there's some cool travel stuff, too.
Give us some of your favorites. Which ones do you like to use?
So I'll start with shopping, just because that's the most fun, I think. So I really like this new website and app called Huckster. It's really what it is it's a browser extension. And the way it works is you add the browser extension to your web browser, just kind of like what you would do with Pinterest. Mm-hmm. So it's like a little button that you click. So when you are, say, looking at something on Amazon or on Macy's.com and you see something you like, but you don't want to pay full price for it, you want to know when it goes on sale, you just huck it, as they say on the site. And that means you just sort of click it and pin it to your account, and then you'll get an alert when the item goes on sale. So I find that really useful.
So with something like that, there's really no downside, you know, other than it taking longer. You have to make sure you don't do an impulse buy. You have to make sure that you wait until you get the alert. But with some of the other ones, I mean, for example, I tried out Mint, which is an older personal finance
right.
one, and you needed to put in all your passwords, all your account numbers. It kind of freaked me out.
You know, a lot of people have felt that way, but the thing with Mint is that it does use bank level security, and it's a read-only app, which means that you input your accounts. Like, I would put in my credit card and my bank accounts, and it won't be able to, you know, actually make any transactions. It's just catching sort of a picture of what's going on and aggregating that information. But I feel pretty confident Mint has been, since it sort of came out, has been purchased by Intuit.
Wasn't there a rival to Mint that by accident gave out hundreds of people's account information and ended up shutting down? I feel like some of these places, like the idea, the concept is great, but especially as I'm starting to do more on my phone, I don't know, all the cybersecurity issues. Do you think it's something people need to be aware of, or do you feel like from what you've studied and the people you've talked to that they've got a handle on it?
I think it is something you need to be aware of. And of course, partly it is sort of what your comfort level is. A lot of these apps and tools are free, but the way they make their money is they kind of track your information, not personally, so they wouldn't know necessarily that Manoush does X, Y, and Z, but they may know that a, you know, New Yorker who lives in such and such area shops at such and such place or travels to this place. And they're able to aggregate that information in order to, you know, target ads to you or, mm-hmm. you know, kind of track your behavior. And so some people don't like that and feel a little bit uncomfortable about it. And that's totally understandable. I think that's what people need to know, is that that's the trade-off that a lot of these apps and tools you have to kind of take into consideration. And one thing I found is that when I all of the tools that we have sort of featured are, you know, ones that we feel they only aggregate information. They're not personally identifying information about the users.
Were any of those tools ones that you do have to pay for that you thought, you know what, this is worth a monthly subscription?
There is one shopping tool called Decide, which it has like a free and then a premium service. And what the premium service does is, say you're going to buy a new TV and you want to know, you know, is this a good time for you to buy it? So if you subscribe to the premium service, which is $30 a year, it will tell you, okay, this is a really good time to buy this right now. There's a 95% chance that this price is going to rise within the next, you know, 3 weeks. Or there's a new model coming out, or, you know, there's a really good chance that this is going to go on sale in the next couple of weeks. I think it's really good for big purchases in electronics. And the great thing about Decide is that they do offer a free trial. So if you want to, if you're in the market for a TV and you want to try the free trial, I think it's 2 weeks or maybe a month. Check it out, and then you can always cancel. But I think that is one of the services that we found was worth paying for. But most of everything else is quote unquote free.
Okay. I wanted to ask you more about the financial planning stuff that there is.
Sure.
Because that's certainly something that I feel like, you know, it's tax time. It's always a chance to look back and see what you should have done differently and look forward to see how you can improve your standing. Do you feel like any of these services can replace a real human being financial advisor? Are we getting to that point where the machines can do a better job in terms of laying out where we should invest, how much we should invest, and sort of handling risk?
I don't know that they can replace a real life financial advisor, but they definitely can get you started into the right direction. And for people who, you know, maybe don't want to spend a lot of money on a fee-only planner, I think they really help you clarify what's going on with your money. Because there's so many of us that have so many accounts across different platforms. You know, we may have a 401k with one job, and then we have an IRA, and, you know, then we've got our bank accounts, and we've got our credit cards. And it's really hard to kind of look at all of that in totality and understand what's going on. So sites like Mint.com, there's a new one that I really like called Personal Capital. They really sort of track and analyze all your investments, your bank, your credit card accounts, and, you know, analyze, like, what is my asset allocation? Like, how are my investments broken down? Am I paying extra in fees? And then the interesting thing about Personal Capital is it's a pretty new tool. And they actually do have a service where they offer fee-based financial advice, which you can buy into, but it's not necessary. You can use its website and its mobile app tools for free. And then if you want to get that extra advisor one-on-one contact, you can.
I wanted to ask you about this new term that I've sort of heard thrown around in relation to all these services and apps, which is behavioral finance. So studying you to make sure that you stick to your spending habits. What is behavioral finance?
Well, I think it's a science, really, that looks at the different ways that, you know, we interact with our money, how sort of the psychology of money affects how we spend and save.
Can you give me a specific example about how any of these apps use behavioral finance to sort of help us manage our money better? I read one example where it said if you went into like Brooks Brothers, it would use location services to buzz you and say, hey, last time you were here, you spent over $300. So, you know, watch it, buddy.
Yeah. You know, I have heard of apps like that. I haven't talked about too many of those, but definitely that's something. There are some apps where you can set alerts like, you know, every time you go into Starbucks or something like that, or it can give you like a little buzz saying, hey, you know, like you don't need to buy that extra latte, or you spent, you know, $50 on coffee last month.
It knows me too well.
Right. And that can be helpful because it can kind of just, you know, remind you in the moment that, oh, yeah, this is sort of what I tend to do. And just sometimes that little extra red flag can be really kind of helpful.
Have you found that your spending has improved if you've started using any of these?
I definitely have used Mint for a long time and love it because I see how much I'm spending in different categories every month since it's aggregating. Oh, okay, last month I ate out a lot, or, you know, I didn't realize I was spending so much money on shoes. So it kind of like alerts me to that because we sort of think of, you know, our spending sort of as in a vacuum. Mm. And there was an interesting study that I was reading the other day about how people tend to underestimate sort of exceptional purchases, which are things like, oh, I had to get the car fixed, or even just like a birthday gift or something like that. And Mint has really helped me see, oh, okay, it's not just nothing that I'm spending on gifts or unexpected repairs. So it's sort of helped me budget properly for those things. So yes, that has definitely made me more aware of my spending and able to sort of cut back on the things where, you know, I feel like they're not important to me. So why am I dropping like unnecessary money on those things. On the flip side, there are some, you know, Huckster or Honey, which is this browser extension that helps you find coupon codes when you're like checking out on an online site. These things can all be great, but they can also tempt you to spend more than you normally would have.
That happened to me the other day. I was like, oh, I'm getting 30% off so I can buy more. And then I ended up spending 30% more, actually, than I thought I would. Okay, last question for you. Do you still use a checkbook?
I only use a checkbook for paying my rent because I have to write a check for my rent. Otherwise, I don't
never
use it for anything.
Great. Ismet Mangla, staff writer with Money Magazine. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.